Thank you very much, Dr. Atzmon. And Dr. Oster, please.
I'm going to talk to you briefly about the Jewish HapMap project, which Ed Burns alluded to this morning. It's a project that Gil Atzmon actually is involved in, and I think you'll have to agree after this that Gil Atzmon is involved in some incredibly interesting projects. The issue of who are the Jews has been a source of curiosity to Jews for quite some time. 100 years ago, the field of race science was in full flourish, and Jews were very active participants in this field of race science. I would refer you to John Efron's book for more information about that. But one of the illustrious Jewish race scientists was Joseph Jacobs, who was an Australian polymath trained at Cambridge University, a great friend of George Eliot's. He wrote a favorable review of Eliot's book, Daniel Deronda, which launched his career. He cataloged all traits Jewish because he was a protege of Sir Archibald Garrett. And he came to New York at the turn of the last century to become the editor of the Jewish Encyclopedia, which at that time was meant to be the source book for all things Jewish. And not surprisingly, Jacobs wrote the entry on anthropology. And he said the remarkable resemblance among Jews, even in different climes, seems to imply a common descent. And Jacobs knew about genetics. He was a friend of Gregory Bateson's before he came to New York. He knew about the rediscovery of Mendel's laws in 1900. And Jacobs suggested that Jewishness might in fact be a dominant genetic trait. So, you know, one gene makes you Jewish. Can't make the same claim for longevity, I have to say. So there have been many different ways in which the issue of Jewish origins has been explored. These types of approaches have really existed from the early days of population genetics. And they've involved looking at whole genomes, looking at mitochondria and Y chromosomes. For those of you who sat in on Matt Kaplan's session, the work for this study was actually done in Matt's laboratory in 2000, along with Michael Hammer, the first author of this study, who is Matt's boss. And it was an analysis of Y chromosomal polymorphisms. And of course, Jewishness is not typically a patrilineal trait. You don't have to be a, you know, have to have a Jewish father in order to be Jewish, although, you know, that tends to be more the rule than the exception. Y chromosomes, of course, are faithfully transmitted from fathers to sons, and they don't tend to mutate or recombine from one generation to the next. And what this study showed is that Jews, for the most part, are a Middle Eastern people who form something of a pretty tight cluster between Europeans shown in green on the upper right quadrant of the slide and North Africans shown at the bottom. For reference, Sub-Saharan Africans are shown on the left. So the Jews, including Ashkenazi, Roman, Kurdish, North African, Near Eastern, including Iranian and Iraqi and Yemenite, form this cluster, and superimposed among them are Saudi Arabians, Syrians, Lebanese, Palestinians, and Druze. So all of these people are people of Middle Eastern origins. But with the contemporary tools that we have, there are ways of dissecting this in far greater detail. So along with our partners at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and Chaim Sheba Medical Center at Tel HaShomer, We at NYU Langone Medical Center launched the Jewish HapMap project, which was a project that was undertaken to develop Jewish HapMaps. So people say to me, you know, why do you say HapMap? They're called HapMaps because our genomes are inherited in blocks that are called haplotypes. So there are these distinctive blocks that are found on each of our chromosomes. They don't tend to recombine or become reshuffled from one generation to the next because there are hot spots and cold spots of recombination in our genomes. And these blocks in which our genes are inherited are haplotypes, hence the term HapMap. So we have undertaken an analysis of many different Jewish populations. In fact, we are expanding our recruitment into populations that aren't indicated here, but some of the populations that we're studying include Ashkenazi, Syrian, Iraqi, Iranian, Bukharan, Greek, Turkish, Italian, Moroccan, Tunisian, German, Libyan, Ethiopian, Yemenite, and Georgian. At Gill's urging, we are also developing a map of Jewish copy number polymorphisms. Gill, as you see, is a guy who wants to push the technology along. And interestingly, our genomes differ not only in the linear sequence of bases that we have, but they also differ at many points along the way in terms of the numbers of genes that we might have. So comparing one of you and me, we might both have two copies of a given gene, but in your case, you may have one and one, one on each of your chromosomes, whereas in my case, I may have zero and two. And so what we want to look at are these copy number polymorphisms because along with our SNPs, our single nucleotide polymorphisms, these are going to be informative about our ancestry. We want to analyze for lineage informative haplotypes, and you're now all expert about haplotypes since I just told you about them. And we want to analyze for evidence of bottlenecks and selection. Now, I'm not going to tell you all about the Jewish HapMap because we're just in the throes of completing our first analysis of Ashkenazi, Sephardic, and Middle Eastern Jewish populations, and we would really like to get it in press before we start discussing it in the public. And quite frankly, we're hoping that you might invite us back next year so that we can talk about this in far greater detail. This will give you the flavor, though, of what we've done in phase one with major Jewish groups, so Ashkenazim, Sephardim, and Mizrahim. And we studied several different Jewish populations, including Iranian, Iraqi, Syrian, Ashkenazi, Italian, Greek, and Turkish. We have run DNA samples on all of these populations on Affymetrix SNP arrays that Gil made reference to. We've checked the quality of our data. We've compared our results to non-Jewish populations that have come from the Human Genome Diversity Project, as well as the so-called POPRES, or population reference, made up principally of Europeans, and we have done data analysis. But this will give you a flavor of the type of analyses that we've done. And this is comparing Jewish populations to worldwide non-Jewish populations. And as you can see, the Jewish populations indicated in yellow form a pretty tight cluster. We think there is a cluster called Jewishness. And these Jewish populations fall between European populations and what we call Israeli non-Jewish populations. These are Druze, Palestinians, and Bedouins who were recruited in Israel. So it fits the idea that Jewish populations, in fact, had Middle Eastern origins, and that there may have been admixture that occurred with European populations along the way. And to look at the relative positions of these populations in somewhat greater detail, we've limited ourselves here to analysis of the Jewish populations along with European populations and Israeli non-Jewish populations. And what you can see is that each of these Jewish diaspora groups forms its own type cluster, and that is true for Ashkenazim, Syrians, Italians, Greeks and Turkish, who of course are a group that we would call Sephardic and therefore pretty homogeneous. And then moving more towards the left of your slide with Middle Eastern populations, Syrians, Iraqis, and Iranians. You can see that the positioning of these groups is pretty close to certain European populations, that in fact the Italian and Ashkenazi Jewish populations, Italians probably being the progenitor population for Ashkenazim, in fact are quite close to northern Italian populations, favoring the idea that some of the Ashkenazi Jewish origin may have in fact have been from people who lived in southern Europe and even in the Italian peninsula. So the themes that we have derived from the Jewish HapMap project include that overall the Jewish groups studied to date form a demonstrable Jewish genetic cluster, and within that cluster, specific diaspora groups form subclusters. Jewish groups are closely related to Middle Eastern and Southern European populations with whom they share genetic origins. And although I haven't gotten into this in considerable detail here, all Jewish groups show some degree of admixture with European and possibly other groups. And that the flow of Jewish genes, and I also haven't made this point here, but it is demonstrable from the data, the flow of Jewish genes into non-Jewish groups can be readily identified. Now, many people seek genetic testing now, especially for their Y chromosomal and mitochondrial DNA types, to determine whether it is typically Jewish in origin, whether it is derived from an illustrious lineage, such as that of Aharon the priest, or whether they are related to someone else with whom they share a surname. And in fact, some years ago, my kids and I did an Ostra Y chromosomal study in which we identified all of the male Ostras in the world via the internet and the telephone book, and we invited them to participate in our study. And we showed that it was literally us and them. So the us were me and my son and my cousins, and the them were everyone else, all the other male Ostras who participated in our study, who, as it turned out, shared the same Y chromosomal types. So some direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies, and I think you'll be hearing a little bit more about this in just a moment, offer ancestry-informative testing as part of their package. And one of these companies is starting to report so-called haploblock testing to demonstrate shared genetic segments, specifically among Ashkenazi Jews. So at this juncture, it is worth exploring how genetic information affects how Jews think about themselves. Will genetic information infringe on halacha, on defining who is a Jew? Could a genetic one-drop rule come into common usage? Because genetic information indicates not only people's origins, but as you've seen from Gil's presentation, their propensity to certain traits, could certain groups be stigmatized because they have evidence for a higher frequency of specific adverse traits? And I think it's only through thoughtful discourse, such as the one that's taking place in this symposium today, can the misadventures of the 20th century's eugenics movement be avoided. So thank you all very much for listening.